And welcome to The Morning Magazine, your front range morning news program here on Community Radio KGNU. It's Friday, February 21st. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Hanley Myers. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about the Four Sacred Gifts. That's the name of the latest book by Dr. Anita Sanchez, who will be giving a lecture on how to build bridges in society using Indigenous wisdom this evening at the First Congregational Church of Boulder. In honor and celebration of Black History Month, a mural will be unveiled this morning in Denver's Five Points, honoring Dr. Justina L. Ford, Colorado's first licensed female African-American doctor. We'll speak live with the Black American West Museum and Heritage Center about Dr. Ford's life and legacy, as well as the new mural. Then we'll hear how Colorado has recently succeeded in eliminating at least one destructive non-native animal, feral hogs. At 8:30, we go to Connections. This morning, host Kathy Partridge and guest Jessica Dancing Heart will discuss gratitude and how it can help you and your community reduce stress, rebuild resilience, and tap into your power. That's coming up on Connections at 8:30. But first, at 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, it's time for your local headlines. Here's Steve Miller.
The Colorado Secretary of State's office mailed out presidential primary ballots with nearly 336,000 returned. That makes up for about a tenth of all ballots sent out. Votes are due on Super Tuesday. This is Colorado's first presidential primary in over two decades. And unaffiliated voters, now the largest voters in Colorado, get to participate in the process this year. Unaffiliated voters got two ballots, one Republican and one Democratic, but they are just allowed to return one. So far, unaffiliated voters have turned in close to 85,000 of the 336,000 ballots. About 60% of the ballots processed so far are Republican. That may be because some voters for a Democratic candidate are waiting until closer to the deadline to cast their vote. Nevada's caucus is this Saturday, with South Carolina's primary February 29th. The ACLU has won a settlement with the State Department for a Colorado man who was denied a passport despite citizenship. Emily Grayson has more.
On Tuesday, the State Department acknowledged the citizenship of Colorado resident Jaime Venegas. He was denied a passport by the State Department multiple times, although he was already a citizen. Venegas was born in Socorro, Texas. He spent his childhood in Juarez, Mexico, and returned back to Texas at the age of 16. In 2005, he moved to Colorado with his family. When he applied for his passport, he submitted his birth certificate and health and immunization records. He was told that they were not enough proof. He was denied a passport in 2014 and again in 2016. On Tuesday, he finally received his passport from the State Department. Venegas is now dropping the lawsuit he filed for with ACLU in 2019. For KGNU, I'm Emily Grayson.
50-degree temperatures expected today and Saturday, and then Sunday, precipitation, snow, or rain likely, and that should continue on through Tuesday. High Sunday in the low 40s. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
And you're listening to your independent community radio station, KGNU. Dr. Anita Sanchez works with communities around the world on combining Indigenous wisdom with science to bridge divisions in society. She'll be speaking about her work and about her book, The Four Sacred Gifts, this evening at the First Congregational Church of Boulder. She spoke with KGNU's Maeve Conran.
We've been in a time where people are so separated from themselves, from each other. We have such huge challenges, whether we're talking economy or environment, socially, economic, I mean, just across the board. And Indigenous wisdom keepers have some of the answers for us to put back into harmony our relationships to ourselves, other people, and the earth itself.
Well, let's go through why we are so disconnected, because it does seem that we're living in an age where on the surface we're more connected than ever. And of course, digital technology has connected us to people around the world. And yet we're seeing alarming rates of mental health issues, suicide, particularly with young people, and a lot of research showing that some of that digital connectedness and maybe social media is contributing to some of that. So maybe take us through why you think we're, while on the surface we may be in a more connected world, on a personal level we are more disconnected.
I think you just said it. So the key is, we are human beings are more than just our flesh, our senses, and that. We yearn for something more. It's just innate to us to be in true connection. And nothing against technology. It does help in some ways. I mean, it's helping communicate, right, to each other. However, you can't Google wisdom. You can't do the kind of innate understanding of who you are and what you are unless you get quiet, or you're in community where you can share with each other, or nature or indigenous elders. So this feeling, this separation and loss, and the whole notion of the what's happening in suicide and depression is because I believe that a lot of people, as I talk to them, whether it's in the workplace or in the community, they're under this illusion that we're separate, that we're not connected. And actually, that is an illusion. Separateness, everything we do, everything who we are, is because of connection to each other, to the earth. And so, but we've been driven to this like separateness. And so we need to really pause and look at what is our worldview, and what has that, the benefits to us, and what are all the disservices? So hopefully we can do a shifting to, yes, the individual is important, but it is in community. It's in our knowing and understanding of us being part of the hoop of life that gives us the real joy and ability to create harmony again in this world.
Now, of course, we're seeing a lot of division, I mean, even just on a political level. And so much of that, if we just talk about politics for a moment, a lot of that division, I mean, if you look at some of the policies that are being put forward, that seems to reinforce the idea that individualism is key. And we're almost seeing individualism on steroids when we see what's happening. Even in the healthcare, you know, debate, or what's happening with education, there's the vilification of anything that's communal or seen to be collective.
Yes,
you know
I think
I mean?
The dirty word that you're talking about that I hear in politics, and as if it's a dirty word, is socialism. You know, and of course, like anything, like capitalism, so any of the isms to any extreme, of course. However, we came into this world not because we're just this, we came in because of our mother, you know, and the womb that she provided for us, and the father that was present there. And we continue to live because of the clean air that we have, because we, the foods that we can harvest out of the earth, and because of each other. A baby dies if it doesn't have connection to someone. So as adults, that's what's happening. So I think the shift that this book and the work that I've been doing is about is having us pause and really look at when growth and development happens, when joy and happiness, is that truly happening all alone in isolation? Or is that really happening because of being able to be in oneness and connection with each other? And what's cool about this, these gifts from the elders, is they're already inside of us. So it's not like you have to go buy something or you're lacking. It's just remembering that we already have in us all the things we can do that we need to be in right relationship with ourselves, other people, and the earth.
But take us through those four gifts, I mean, that you outline in your book. I know you're going to be talking about them Friday evening.
Yes, yes.
As part of the Mackenzie lecture that you're giving.
And they're no secret, because we want everybody to use them, whether you read the book or hopefully you can come to the Mackenzie series. But we want you to know these are there. So these Indigenous elders came together from all over the world, all different traditions, back in the mid-90s, because they had heard from spirit in ceremony that human beings had forgotten, you know, understand, forgotten, not flawed. So they need to restore the gifts that are innate to them to remember that they're part of a whole hoop of life. So the four gifts, the first is the power to forgive the unforgivable. And you just pause and breathe in that, the power to forgive the unforgivable, because there's a lot that's out there that comes to people's minds when we think of forgiveness. The second is the power of unity. Unity will take all of us to create a thriving, just, powerful, loving world, right? And then the third is the gift of healing. And it's a process that we can use every day. And the fourth and last gift that they put in the hoop was the gift of hope in action. So all these gifts we already have. And what Spirit told all of these indigenous wisdom keepers is that take these out. They belong to all humanity, not just indigenous, all humanity, so that we can remember, if we practice these, we'll remember how to create harmony, how to be in healthy relationship with ourselves and other beings. And everywhere I ask, Maeve, people about how many would like healthier relationships, every single hand comes out, every single. And how many would like a better relationship with yourself? Every hand goes up. So there are ways we can do this. We don't have to be hopeless about it. We can do it.
It's not easy, though. And certainly that first one, forgiveness, because as you said, I mean, that's a word I think that is often put out there, not necessarily understood. And I think it's worth clarifying, because there are so many heinous things that have been committed against people, against Indigenous people, against people held in slavery. And those wrongs have never been righted, because it's not just a matter of one side saying, well, I forgive you for the crimes that have been committed. The people who and the descendants of the folks who have committed those crimes have to acknowledge that those crimes have been committed in the first place. And that seems to be the gap. That seems to be the what's missing in so many ways. So, you know, let's dig into that, because, you know, forgiveness is one thing, but I think there needs to be an acknowledgement of the crimes that have been committed.
I think you're correct. However, we have to look at what it is we want to create in our power. So you are absolutely right, especially the big forgiving the unforgivable. So you're right. I think about as being an Indigenous person, all of the genocide of Indigenous people all over the world, and I can't even say it historically, it's present day too. Or the violence against women, which is also part of my history of sexual abuse, you know, and it's continuing. But let's be clear about forgiveness. It's important to know what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness doesn't mean you forget. Forgiveness doesn't mean you're a traitor to your group of people. Forgiveness does not mean you're weak. Forgiveness does not mean that you don't seek justice, that you don't try to change. I'm not going to say try. That we change the systems and structures that allow that pain and suffering to begin with. So it doesn't mean that. What it does mean is that I want to use my energy for now to create what I use all that energy to address in the present what is happening and going forward. So again, I'm not forgetting, but I'm not going to carry the wounds and the anger and resentment and hurt, all that, for what didn't happen or what could have happened, but rather forgive that. Because in doing forgiveness, what it really is about, people think it's external, but first and foremost, it's forgiving yourself for not using the energy as fully as possible for what you want to create in the here and now and future. So it's forgiving yourself. So it has to do with self-love, but also forgiveness allows you to free that person or persons or groups to become something else. Because if I couldn't sense that racism could end, or that sexism couldn't end, then I get stuck and locked into being part of my own perpetrator. And so that's not what I want. I want to create what's possible. And that's what we need to be putting our energy into that.
Well, Anita Sanchez will be giving the Mackenzie Lecture. It's 20 years of the Mackenzie Lectureship happening at the First Congregational Church of Boulder, Friday evening at 7 p.m., Then on Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., there will be a workshop, Indigenous Wisdom for Modern Times, Embracing the Four Sacred Gifts. And then are you giving another lecture on Sundays?
At 8:30 a.m. at their Sunday service, their first service, I'll be speaking at that as well. We want to give as much opportunity, not only for the congregation, but for anyone in the community who would love to come. Whatever your age, whatever your background, whatever your demographics, you are welcome.
And this is all happening at the First Congregational Church of Boulder. Find out more at firstcong.net. But Anita, is there a way that people can find out more about your work? Do you have a website?
Yes. I think the best, easiest way is to go to foursacredgifts.com, F-O-U-R, sacredgifts.com.
Dr. Anita Sanchez, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you are listening to KGNU. The time is 8:20. Well, in honor and celebration of Black History Month, Connect for Health Colorado has commissioned award-winning street artist Max Sansing to create a mural honoring Dr. Justina L. Ford in historic Five Points at the corner of 27th and Welton Street. Dr. Ford is a medical pioneer and Colorado's first licensed female African-American doctor. The mural is scheduled to be dedicated this morning at 10 a.m. I'm joined on the line by Terry Gentry, a volunteer docent at the Black American West Museum and Heritage Center. Terry, thank you so much for joining us on the line this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about Dr. Ford and her legacy.
Dr. Ford was granted her medical license in 1902. She was denied membership to the Colorado Medical Society, and you had to have that membership to be on staff in the hospital, so she set up practice in her home. And the museum is in her former home, which was relocated from 2335 Arapahoe Street to its present site at 3091 California Street. Dr. Ford attended the delivery of more than 7,000 babies, more than 37 different nationalities, and knew in the range of 8 to 11 languages and dialects. In addition to attending the delivery of those babies, she was a pediatrician, so she took care of them after they were born. And she also took care of a lot of their family members. So she was really driven to take care of a lot of people and impacted thousands and thousands and thousands of lives in our community.
And this, in the ceremony that's taking place this morning, there's the opportunity for residents delivered by Dr. Ford to personally honor her by signing a board with their name and birth year. And that's been a big part of kind of this mural element, correct? That bringing those people together.
Yes, we're really excited to see some of the Ford babies, as we call them, join us for the tribute this morning. And the media is going to be out there to celebrate that as well, and we'll get a chance to meet some of the babies that are still here. The last baby she delivered would have been in 1952, so that really excites us to have so many folks from that era come out and hang out this morning.
And then I hear the board that will be signed by some of those Ford babies will later end up in the museum. Is that correct? So, and you already have a room in the museum dedicated to Dr. Ford.
We do have a room dedicated to Dr. Ford, and we have a room dedicated to the Five Points neighborhood. So we'll be able to celebrate some of the folks in both rooms or highlight in a particular area of the museum.
And there's also a hashtag that's hashtag Dr. Ford delivered me that's being used to bring some of the Ford babies together. So if you happen to, this happens to be news to you about this event, we do want to let you know that, again, this is happening this morning at the corner of 27th and Welton Street at 10 a.m. And there's also this hashtag Dr. Ford delivered me that you can use to kind of connect. I want to ask you, Terry, a little bit about the significance, a little bit more to kind of dig into let's start with some of the challenges. You mentioned some of the challenges that Dr. Ford faced in her career and in her life, trying to have this impact and having this impact on the community. Can you speak a little bit more about some of those challenges that Dr. Ford encountered and overcame to do the type of medical work that she did for so long?
One of her challenges throughout her career was access to hospitals. And from what we understand, Denver General gave her access during the 1930s, but unfortunately wasn't consistent. And there are some challenges that she faced with trying to take care of her patients. While they were at home, she could, but a lot of times she wasn't allowed to come into the hospital and take care of them. So it created some stress or distress for some of the families. she never gave up on that. She continued to fight for that and applied for membership to the Colorado Medical Society again in 1949, asking for her membership, and they finally granted the membership in January 1950. So 48 years later, she was finally granted that membership so she could have open access to the hospitals. But she was about service. There were so many situations where people were not able to pay their bill, or they paid through other means, maybe pulling things out of their garden to give her, or some other services. And the local cab company also helped to deliver her or bring her to some of her patients in the community, or other community members would drive her, or her nephews if she didn't drive. So there were a few challenges of getting back and forth, but she made sure she was there and available for any of her patients, and service was her number one priority. She wanted to make sure that all of her patients were well taken care of and provided the best medical services she could possibly provide for everyone in the community.
And as far as the significance of, and you're touching on this a bit, about Connect for Health Colorado recognizing Dr. Ford with this mural and with this dedication, could you say a little bit more about that, about the significance in the modern era of recognizing somebody like Dr. Ford and having an organization like Connect for Health Colorado recognizing Dr. Ford, and why that's important?
I think it's important because the intention is to celebrate Dr. Ford and the services that she gave to this community. She was second to none. Her standards were very high, and sometimes we wondered if she worked around the clock making sure that her patients were well taken care of. And I think Connect for Health's intention is to celebrate Dr. Ford and to take us to a place where service is more important than everything else. When you're taking care of your patients and you want to make sure that their health is in a good place, that's the intention, is to celebrate that and to help draw attention to giving the best health care possible. So we really appreciate their commitment to showcasing Dr. Ford and taking their commitment to patients to another level.
And that was Terry Gentry, volunteer docent at the Black American West Museum and Heritage Center, telling us about the life of Dr. Justina L. Ford, who there will be a mural dedicated in her honor today, again at 27th and Welton Street in Five Points at 10 a.m. this morning. There is an open invitation for anyone to come, but particularly looking for some of the 7,000 babies delivered during her 50 years as a physician in Denver, the so-called Ford babies, to join. Terry, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate visiting with you.
And this is The Morning Magazine on KGNU.
This program is made possible by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Fisk Planetarium on the CU Boulder campus, featuring Voyagers, a theatrical performance offering creative access to science and math through the performing arts. More information at colorado.edu/Fisk or by calling 303-492-5002.
Well, Colorado has recently succeeded in eliminating at least one destructive non-native animal. For now, anyway. KVNF's Jody Peterson has the story.
Colorado has become the first state in the U.S. to successfully eradicate feral hogs, according to the State Parks and Wildlife Department. These non-native animals have colonized at least 38 states and cause an estimated $1.5 billion in damage each year. Feral swine were first reported in the state in the 1970s, and more than 350 had been roaming southeast Colorado in Baca and Kiowa counties. Now they've all been eliminated. The animals don't seem to have become established on the western slope, although a small group of four feral hogs was discovered roaming near Hotchkiss last year. They were all killed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It was thought that they escaped from a game farm near Colbran. Colorado Parks and Wildlife spokesman Joe Lewandowski told KVNF more about the feral hog problem.
There was a pretty significant problem down in the southeast corner of the state near Oklahoma and Texas and Kansas, where those states have feral swine problems. along with the Department of Agriculture, our agency really went after them, and we basically exterminated these pigs. Although, you know, we have to keep a close eye out. They're a very significant problem elsewhere and not that far from Colorado. So while we think we've gotten rid of them for now, it might not be the last time we see them.
So what kind of damage do those feral pigs cause?
A lot of what they do is they dig up farm fields, pastures, backyards, eating on roots and insects. They can kind of take over an ecosystem. They reproduce prolifically, and within three generations, they go from basically being, you know, maybe a domestic pig that escaped from a yard to a feral hog. They are dangerous to people, and they will kill animals, too. These things are very tough to find. They're very smart. They're tough to hunt. We don't want them getting a foothold anywhere in Colorado.
And that was Joe Lewandowski with Colorado Parks and Wildlife. If you do happen to see any pigs roaming around where they don't belong, be sure to contact Colorado Parks and Wildlife or the local extension office. This is Jody Peterson.
And that does it for The Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hanley Myers.